previously.tvpodcastnetwork.
It's a good day.
Yep, one of my best. And nothing is going to ruin it.
Well done.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210. Today's episode, Season 7, Episode 30, Senior Week. Now, here are your seniors, Tara Ariano and Sarah DeBundy.
Senior citizens. Hi, Sarah.
Seriously, when this season started, we weren't, but now we're at Shady Acres. Get off our lawn.
Hello.
Yeah. I'm so old. I was tweeting this morning about the amazing local mushrooms we just got and how fresh they are. So that's 43, guys. Look forward to it or look back on it for some of us.
Don't be such a squeef.
Too late.
Shall we?
Sure.
Okay. Let's start with our C plot. Donna blows off Dr. Big Booty Trudy, as you will recall from last episodes. This actress playing Professor Langley was previously Big Booty Trudy on Miami Vice.
I would also like to add, apparently she spells her name like Langley.
Oh, we're going to get to it. Yes.
But I'm not playing that in the visual aids. That's why it keeps changing back and forth.
Oh, I didn't realize you changed it back. I was like,
oh no, you were changing it back.
Yes, I was changing it to the correct spelling because we don't see it until this episode. We don't see her name spelled out until Donna goes to her office.
So correct according to the show or correct according to God?
Correct according to the door that we see.
Okay. Yeah, I kept changing it back because it's Langley, L-E-Y, damn you. Not you.
Oh, I was correcting the spelling wrong.
She spells it. This is so exciting, listeners.
The door spells it L-A-N-G-E-L-Y.
Correct.
Yeah.
That is correct. But it's incorrect. It should be L-E-Y.
Okay.
So I just changed it everywhere.
Sarah,
I'm an asshole.
They show you the door so they know. They must have had a legal reason for spelling it that way. It's like how Rob Lowe on Brothers and Sisters was McAllister with a C. Like, that's not a name either, but presumably for some kind of legal reason they changed it to that crazy non-spelling of a non-name that's never existed. Like, there are countless examples of this on television for surnames.
Oh, I just thought people were stupid and didn't understand how things were.
I mean, it could be that also, but
uh-huh.
Thanks for the tip, Dick.
I deserve that. Let's move on.
All right. So David is quizzing Donna for her business of fashion finals so that she doesn't let down Professor Langley again. He then fails to read the room as Donna resumes studying and he starts blah blahing at her about thinking he made the right decision buying the Peach Pit after dark. By the way, we never saw him like actually assemble the money. That was a plot point in a previous episode that he didn't know how he was going to actually do it after he committed to do it. But apparently that all just happened off screen and was fine.
I guess.
Ugh, why do I care? He blahs some more about how things are going well in his life, except for one thing. His lease on his house is about to be up. I honestly can't believe he continued living there this long, given that it was Mark's house and David is Kelly's stepbrother, but okay. Donna's ignoring him, so he puts his hand on her textbook to get her attention so that he can ask what she thinks about getting an apartment with him or maybe about him moving in at the beach for the summer. And Donna impatiently tells him she can't deal with this right now and is actually rightfully pissed that he is bringing this up to her an hour before this huge exam. And he has the gall to be pissy and manipulate her into apologizing to him as he storms off. David sucks. Just a reminder.
Yeah, I mean, everything about this plot line is a no, but yeah, moving on.
Yes. So Donna makes it to the classroom as Professor Langley's handing out exam booklets. Stupid Donna is still cramming from her notes as she's sitting at her desk, forcing Professor Langley to announce to the room that if they haven't learned the material yet, they're not going to. She also says the test will count for 75% of their final grade, which A, would probably never happen in a non-STEM course, and B, just makes you wonder what the big deal was about their presentations if they were worth less than 25%, presumably. But anyway, yeah. Donna
also,
is frozen.
All of this is so important. I guess I'll just bring this up now.
Okay.
Why doesn't Donna have a note on file about her learning disability?
Yeah. Thank you. I brought that up. That's in my notes too. It hasn't come up since, I think since she took that placement exam in their freshman year. And there was like a plot point about someone saying she got more time to do it. But it has never come up since then that I can recall.
They must have just forgotten.
Probably. So Donna's frozen with Professor Langley's words echoing in her ears. And when Professor Langley's like, I said you should start, Donna freaks out and grabs her bag and runs into the hall to cry like a baby. I made a gif of her, like the fisheye lens on her and then on her classmates turning around and giving her the hairy eyeball, which we're supposed to think is just her imagination. But I choose to believe they really were being like, what is your problem? It's a fucking exam.
Yeah. Anyway. And then she's also, you'll also see this in the visual aids. She goes out to cry next to this poster for a, I don't know what the puppy is doing, but there's this puppy on the poster that's like, buh? It's yep. like, these two creatures have a lot in common. Sorry, mm-hmm. puppy.
So then Donna finds David at a dumb campus party to tell him that she walked out of the exam and therefore failed the test. She can't explain why. She just froze. She doesn't know what happened. And she thinks she should have studied harder, but David says she could have aced the exam. She wants to know what's wrong with her, and David muses maybe she doesn't want to pass in clip two.
I get this funny feeling like maybe you did it on purpose.
David, you know, I'm not going to graduate now.
Yeah, it's an easy way to not move on with your life or with me.
Oh, this is great. Just kick me while I'm down.
Don, I'm sorry, but why else would you walk out? It seems like an excuse to not live with me.
Any excuse, no matter how flimsy. Maybe he's onto something.
Also, she has lived with him before. So the reason that she doesn't want to live with him, maybe you were a fucking pig and we fought constantly. So, you know, but she doesn't. So then Donna goes and knocks on the door of an office belonging to Professor Langeley. Not how that's spelled, I have in my notes, but fine. You can see that door in the visual aids mocking us. Donna wants to prove to Professor Langley that she knows the material, but Langley says her chance to do that was this morning. And Donna has not thought through what she was going to say at this encounter at all, as we hear in clip three.
Look, if I don't pass, I don't graduate.
I'm sorry, you should have thought about that before walking out. Now, if you excuse me.
No, please, Professor Langley, you have to give me another chance.
Why? Because you have the gall to ask for one?
Because I can pass the test.
Then why didn't you?
Good question.
Yeah. I have a few notes on that. I'm sorry is a thought. I'm sorry I stormed out and made a scene and disrupted the exam for my fellow students and was a dick. But since she hasn't, she could mention her learning disability, which, as we've discussed, has come up zero times. What is it with Donna and thinking she deserves special dispensations whenever she's about to graduate from something? Because this is fucking Donna Martin graduates all over again. Like, nothing entitles you to get anything. You left the exam. That potentially could be the end of the story. And she would be completely in her rights not to give you another chance.
Yeah. And once again, this is kind of a who cares-er because it's college. So just take the credit. It's a state university. You could take the credits in the summer and just finish it. And who cares? Who cares?
Yeah. But that's not the end. Donna shows up at David's place. And the first thing he says is that he doesn't intend to apologize, but she's not expecting him to. Barf. She says she tried to get Professor Langley to let her take the test, repeating David's theory that she took off because she was scared of moving on. And when David asks if that's the truth, she says it is. And pissily, he tells her not to be afraid of him. The relationship is the only thing that doesn't scare him right now, he says, but it's the thing that scares her the most, and with good fucking reason, by the way, as we have extensively discussed on this podcast before. But she means that she doesn't know what she would do without him. Probably a lot of the same things she did when she dumped him the first time because he cheated on her, or the time she dumped him after that. Anyway, Professor Langley fucking caved and is letting her take the test the next morning. This is bullshit, is in my notes in all caps. As a grade grubber, I am furious.
Same.
David immediately flips into cram mode, and honestly, she just should go get some sleep. For the record, that's my tip to you. You've studied enough. Just relax and calm yourself down, because tension is the problem here, not you not knowing your shit. But it looks like Donna is getting a special exam, oral exam, as Professor Langley reads the questions and Donna answers. orally. And fucking Donna still can't be a gracious adult about this huge violation of the academic contract in clip four.
You have 10 seconds.
I don't know a third method.
Why not?
I don't understand this. I studied so hard and I only know two.
Relax, Miss Martin. There are only two.
Then why did you ask me for three?
I wanted to see how you'd handle uncertainty, misinformation. It's a part of life. It's also a part of this business.
Why are you so mean to me?
Now's not the time. Next question.
No, I don't like being treated this way. Why are you out to get me?
Oh, God.
I'm tough on all my students. That's the only way any of you are going to survive in this field. I've been particularly tough on you because you've got what it takes to actually make a career in fashion.
I do?
Yes, you do. You're very, very talented. I think you're a natural. And if you're afraid of the next step, you shouldn't be. Because if anyone's ready for it, you are. All you lack is confidence. Now, can we get on with the next question?
Fire away.
Why are you so mean to me? You're 22 and an adult, and this just shows you're not capable of having any kind of career because you are totally unprofessional.
Yeah, like all you lack is, you know, knowing how to set an alarm, knowing how to show up on time, preparation, organization, study skills, manners. Other than that, you're going to be a star.
So after the exam, suddenly Professor Langley is nice. She credits Donna for doing the work and urges her to believe in herself, and they hug, and I hate this. Basically.
Yeah, and get used to this kind of completely unwarranted gold getting blown up Donna's culo for the rest of the series, because all of a sudden she's a fashion design star. What? Okay.
On to our B plot. Rush thinks Steve is trifling and Claire kind of does too. I wish I thought that they were going to join forces. They don't. They're just separately think he's trifling. So on campus, Brandon and David, in David's very ugly shirt, which you can see in the visual aids, tease Steve about having no plans for what he's going to do after he graduates. This is where we learn that Steve is roasting Brandon as part of the festivities surrounding Brandon's receipt of the Outstanding Student Award. 1 million barfs here. Oh my God.
I just, between that and the amount of time that all these people are spending doing like school spirity things on campus during senior week, which
But Steve is unconcerned. He has a meeting today about becoming a junior partner in something we still don't know at this point. Elsewhere on campus, Claire stops by her dad's office where his loose-lipped assistant is telling secrets in clip five.
I wish I was going to Paris.
Oh, I thought you meant about graduation.
Oh, that too. But I was talking about your dad leaving CU.
Pardon?
Teaching at the Sorbonne. Sounds so romantic.
Does it?
It does? Okay.
But yeah, this is the first Claire's heard of anything of this sort. Nice going, Chancellor. So then Rush and Steve meet at the Peach Pit. Rush is in fine fettle, but has a sensitive assignment for Steve. He wants Steve to work his angles with the Chancellor to find out if Rush is in the running to win something, an award called the Condor Crest. Just a reminder that when Steve was in high school, Rush had gone to USC, but sure. Steve can't believe that that's what this big meeting was about. He thought they were going to talk about Steve, and Rush didn't come there empty-handed. He has a grad present for Steve, biographies of Bill Gates and Lee Iacocca, which you can also see the visual aids. Steve can't fake excitement about receiving the gift of thick books with no pictures. Rush tells him Steve is going into the world without a safety net, so he was hoping to inspire Steve with stories of other self-made men. It's news to Steve that he will have no safety net. So apparently he thought he was going into business with his dad. Now, much to discuss here. The last we heard of what Rush does for a living other than cheat at golf is he's a producer, right? He's a movie producer. That was how he met Steve's biological mother, that he was like shooting something wherever she was.
I think so.
So we've never seen any evidence other than the time he was in a porno that Steve has any interest in going into film. I mean, I guess the internship at the agency. But like, I don't think you just get to be jumped in as a junior partner on your dad's production company. I mean, maybe you do, but like why he assumed any of this, we don't know because it's never come up in the show.
He's before. Also not like it's not a law firm. I don't know why they would call it that.
No. No.
And also, isn't Samantha basically the custodial parent? Like,
yeah,
Rush can cut Steve off all he wants, but presumably there's still some Hartley House money sitting mm-hmm. around.
Yeah.
This whole thing is so dumb. And who
yes,
cares?
It is.
Yeah.
Who indeed? So at some senior week event, Claire and Steve compare notes on their dad's big news, except Claire says that her dad asked her to go with him to Paris, which why did we not see that scene? Presumably because they can only pay either Rush or the Chancellor, and that was the choice they made. Anyway, Steve is shocked and wants to know what Claire told him. She says she hasn't told her dad anything yet, but she's nervous about the Chancellor being alone in France. Why? Like, he's obviously a perfectly capable person, and he's not that old. Like, it's not like he's 80. He will be fine. But whatever.
Doesn't he have a Nobel Prize or something?
Like, yes, he does.
Okay, maybe it's not in French, but settle down.
Well, we'll get to that in the next episode. Anyway, Steve is like, what about me being alone in LA? And Claire condescendingly says it's different, which it is, but not for the reason that she thinks. And Steve pouts that she always picks the Chancellor over him. And Claire says she hasn't chosen anything yet, but Steve mopes that when she does, he's the one who's going to get the bon voyage. And maybe he is now that he's being a crybaby about it. And then it's time for Steve to roast Brandon, which seems to hinge on Brandon's perfection. Savage. It then turns to self-pity about Steve being everything Brandon isn't, in a bad way. Brandon takes the mic to call Steve's speech depressing and the one Brandon himself had planned to be basic. But listening to Steve, he realizes there was something more important he needed to do, which is bore the assembled students, probably 10 of whom know either of them, by roasting Steve. Brandon doesn't know what Rush actually told Steve, or he might not actually be this shitty, but then again, maybe he would. It's Brandon. Clip 6.
See, my good friend Steve's idea of minimum wage is any income he makes above and beyond his trust fund. And his definition of a have-not is someone whose father buys him a new Corvette only every other year. You see, for Steve, hard work is putting down the toilet seat, and success is defined by how much work he can actually get out of doing. Which, of course, makes Steve Sanders my best friend and also the most successful man I know. Thank you very much.
I mean, that's mean, but it's also really accurate. Sorry, Steve.
Well, but also, who gives a shit? Like,
exactly.
Who among the assembled would even be there is A, and B, mm-hmm. What? Like,
yeah.
I don't understand why he's being roasted. He's not George Burns, mm-hmm. although he may have been the same height. he's not. This reminds me of the Brandon thing from senior breakfast at West Beverly. That it's like, oh, so these are the only people that everyone knows, so they're just going to roast each other.
Yeah. But like the show is so lazy, it doesn't even bother to establish that anyone is there other than Brandon and Claire. Like we don't even see Munce or any of his other frat brothers in the crowd. Like it's so stupid. Whatever.
Yeah, it is.
Steve waves off the nice-ish ending of Brandon's roast and heads to get another drink to Spike. And when Brandon follows with a half-hearted apology for being too rough, they snipe at each other briefly before Brandon walks away and Steve falls into a fountain. Brandon tries to give him a hand out in his giant pants, by the way, which you can see in motion flapping like a fucking sail on a galleon. It's crazy.
And when he leans over the lip of the fountain to try to help Steve up, he has to hike them up like they are skirts.
Right. It's like me taking the dogs out in the morning, still in my pajama pants. And by in the morning, I might mean 2 p.m. Anyway, Brandon tries to give him a handout. But Steve is still too wounded, and when Claire comes to try to pull him out, he huffs that he doesn't need her help either. And after a commercial, Steve has changed clothes and come back to the party to be sad in public. I swear this guy cannot feel a feeling unless someone is watching him. Like, this is the 50th time we've seen him do something like this bullshit.
Also, the surf rock band in the background is, like, not really conducive. Like, Go find a dingy bar. I'm sure there is one.
Yeah. But then no one who knows him would see him being sad. And then what's the point, right?
True. Off.
Anyway, Claire comes over to try to get Steve to talk to her, and he's shitty to her about Paris. She asks why he's being such a jerk, pointing out that they're all under pressure, wanting to move on, but not wanting to leave. She sometimes wishes they could stay like this forever. So does the show, probably. She's sorry she underestimated Steve's reaction to the possibility of her leaving, but they're all graduating next week and things are going to change. And Steve doesn't respond, so Claire's like, bye. Sometime later, Rush shows up at the Walsh house in a great mood, looking for Steve. He excuses Steve from having to ask Claire about the Condor Crest. Steve doesn't care and has no follow-ups, so Rush is forced to make the announcement himself. He got it! Steve doesn't bother pretending to care before getting into all his grievances in clip 7.
Well, I just don't understand how you can be so excited about some stupid award after what you did to me.
What I did to you?
You cut me off. Gave me a few books and told me to have a nice life. You took away my security.
Oh, wait a minute, wait a minute. Excuse me, young man. I put you through college. That is your security.
Oh, well, thanks for nothing.
Steve, son, I am what I am because of CU. It's why I stay so involved. It's why that stupid award means so much to me. It's also why I know you're going to be just fine.
Oh, that's comforting.
It should be. Look, you got a problem. You give me a call later. I got to get back to the office. We're breaking in a new junior partner.
Way to rub it in.
Then he goes, come on, take care. Like,
yeah.
I mean, look, it's fine to be like, I paid for your college and now the kitchen is closed.
Mm-hmm.
But first of all, that's negotiated senior year, not senior week.
Yeah.
And second of all, do you think that's a great idea with that guy? Are you familiar with Steve's past work involving legacy keys and being accused of date rape? Like, you got to wean a guy like
that. And plagiarism in his senior year.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Good luck, Rush. Like, you're going to be bailing that out of jail. Well done. Like, what if he starts, doing raves again? Is that what you want?
Right.
Maybe you should have him where you can keep an eye on him. It's just my opinion.
Yes, there needs to be a universal basic income for Steve. So, Steve, basic income. Like, he needs it.
Yeah,
and
he does.
Yes, all of this is preposterous. Steve would have known the score before he started this year. You're totally right. So Steve comes downstairs to make some baseball-related small talk in clip 8.
They did a little thing. You know, advance the runner, hit and run. Stuff doesn't show up in the box score. Kind of like you freaking out yesterday.
Advancing the runner does show up in the box score, you cunt. Not that anybody can tell what you're even talking about because you're like blathering through a mouthful of cereal with your mouth open again. So nice.
Yeah. And no one on the set was like, look, you can chew with your mouth open or flap the newspaper, not both, because that was totally inaudible and stupid.
It's just so, it's like the gum champing from the early seasons. Like, is that supposed to be some bro thing?
Right. Or that he's a tough guy chewing his not tofu. So everyone can see. Anyway, primarily, Steve has come down to yell at Brandon for letting Rush in. Brandon has no empathy for Steve and basically says he's worked for everything he has, which is somewhat true. Although, let's be real, Brandon's parents are also at the upper end of middle class and, you know, by many definitions, pretty rich, probably. But anyway, Brandon may not have the same kind of financial safety net that Steve does, as far as Brandon knows, still. But his safety net is his friends. And Steve is like, what about after we graduate? And Brandon says they're graduating from school, not each other. And Steve seems comforted. Blarf. Then Claire comes over, and before even saying hi, Steve just asks if she's going to Paris. She says it's tempting, but no, she's not, because Claire was LC before LC, I guess. And now she may come in. She basically says Steve's infantile reaction made her stay because it showed her he cares. Way to teach him how to treat you, Claire. My God, what are you, Donna? Anyway, they agree to plan for the future together. finally to our A plot. Parker Lewis can't invest Val's money and also is Kelly infertile? So after all that from the last episode, Kelly's got news. Clip 9.
I'm not pregnant.
Nant. Not pregnant. Please learn how to pronounce this word, actors of the world. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I am not a crackpot. Yeah.
No, you're not. So Kelly got her period the day they were supposed to go see her doctor, and Brandon mopes that she must be relieved, and she chirps that she is before intuiting that he's not, because she's a psychology student and is trained to recognize these things. That's me saying that, not the show. He says he's relieved too, but part of him is sad. And they segue from that to Bill Taylor's in town. He and Kelly are going to have dinner. Fresh start time. Hooray. So then Val is showing up at Parker Lewis's echoingly empty, extremely fake office, which has Bill Taylor's name on the door. Parker Lewis apologizes, saying that Bill only recently decided to open an LA branch, so this office is temporary. Val had hoped Bill would be there since she heard from Kelly's roommate that Bill was in town, and Parker Lewis can't improvise. Okay, he actually can, just not well. Clip 10.
He is. Oh, of course he is. He's on Rodeo right now supervising the setup of our permanent space. But if you would like, I will arrange for us to have dinner tonight.
That'd be great.
Consider it done.
Totally. That is a dinner that will definitely happen.
Man, this is just dragging on so long. And each of them should be like side-eyeing the other like weeks ago, because she's just like, so when do I meet Bill? So when do I meet Bill? Like, I know she's a mark, but Jesus, like, get some money from her and get out. She's obviously bonkers.
Yeah.
And he's obviously lying, but here we are. Sigh.
Yeah. There is shadiness on both sides. You're right. In the meantime, they have business to do. Parker Lewis has a bunch of papers for Val to sign, authorizing her investment in his shady scheme. I mean, totally legit business opportunity. She didn't bring a check because the bank won't clear the proceeds of the sale that mysteriously happened until later that afternoon. Parker Lewis says that Bill won't want to have a business dinner until the business is all settled. Like, what? But Val offers to come back with the check. But Parker Lewis tells her to meet him at something called Joe's, which means she's going to cheat on the peach pit, I guess. Okay. So then at her gynecologist's office, Kelly is saying she can't believe it takes this many tests to go on the pill. Okay. LOL. She wasn't on the pill already. Kelly has been on the pill since she was 13. If this character was at all consistent, this is ridiculous.
I think there is a lot. I think there is a reference to it in the sleepover episode.
I think you're right. Yeah.
She's like, and then my mother put me on the pill.
Yeah. But it was around the time that Brenda had her pregnancy scare, right?
Yeah.
That she says that's how long. Yeah. Anyway, the doctor says normally it doesn't take that many tests, but she noticed some irregularities. Clip 11.
I ran a pregnancy test. It was positive.
But that's impossible. I told you I got my period.
Actually, you didn't. You miscarried.
What? Oh, my God. I can't believe it. Are you saying that this happened this morning?
Kelly, the ultrasound showed abnormalities on your ovaries and fallopian tubes.
I'm only 22. 22-year-olds aren't supposed to miscarry.
Have you had backaches or painful periods recently? Kelly, this is important.
Yes, I guess so.
I'd like to run more tests right away.
Why?
You may have a fertility problem.
I don't understand this. I got pregnant, didn't I? One second you're telling me I miscarried, the next second you're telling me I'm infertile.
There are certain conditions which may make getting pregnant difficult, and if you do get pregnant, make carrying the child to term less likely.
Are you telling me that I may never be able to have children?
Kelly, I know this is confusing and hard to hear. It's also preliminary, which is why I'd like to run some tests. Can you stay? Kelly?
Yeah, sure. Whatever.
I don't know who all of that was for, because if this show is still for teenagers, this is all outside of anything they would have any interest in. And if it's for adults, it's idiotic. Like, a woman of 22 would know that sometimes what seems to be your period is a miscarriage. Like, it happens a lot.
Yeah. She would also have had, like, if it were endometriosis, presumably, like, first of all, we don't need a PSA on it. It's not why we watch the show. I don't know why we watch the show anymore. Guess we hate ourselves. Not as much as I hate this doctor, though, for completely opening herself up to unnecessary lawsuits by being like, you could be infertile. Like, you might want to like low tone it just a hair with the pronouncements. And this is really serious. Like, well, maybe it could be, but maybe it's not endometriosis. Right. And if you're finding abnormalities, you should maybe prepare her for the idea that it's not that. But at the same time, who cares? Like, why do we have to see any of this, honestly?
Yeah. It's also a very mean thing to do to an actually pregnant lady to have to act this. Yeah.
Why do they keep doing this to the pregnant actors? Why?
Well, anyway, you'll never believe this, but when Val meets Parker Lewis for dinner, he has to dimple that Bill won't be joining them because he had other plans. Val seems like she might be getting wise, saying she's not putting her money in Bill Taylor investments without having a face-to-face with Bill Taylor. As we will soon find out, it wouldn't make a difference if she did. But anyway, Parker Lewis tries to weasel her into believing that the man behind the man is going to be taking her money, but she wants to know how much confidence she should have in Parker Lewis if he can't even set up a meeting. And he's like, I can. He's just surprised by how badly she wants one. Hasn't Kelly told Val how much time Bill spends outside the office? And Val can't exactly admit that she and Kelly don't talk about that because they hate each other. So she just says that Kelly hasn't mentioned it. And Parker Lewis claims that Bill has a 4-hour work week, basically, and hires minions like Parker Lewis to do the real work. And he also wants to know if Kelly really hasn't mentioned Parker Lewis. And at this, Val admits that finally that she and Kelly aren't close. So then why would Val want to invest with Kelly's dad? Parker Lewis wants to know off the record. Hilaire. Val says it's to drive Kelly nuts by having a relationship with Bill. So again, if he were legit, this would be where he'd be like, check, please. I mean, at the restaurant, not her check. I guess that doesn't work in this.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, I want to invest with you out of spite is not a good reason and is weird and bizarre.
No, I agree.
Okay, so Parker Lewis doesn't know if this helps, but Parker Lewis never told Bill that Val and Kelly were friends so that Bill would take Val seriously as an investor, and Val appreciates that. Now she's going to do something for Parker Lewis. She gives him a check for $100,000, but she wants that meeting. Why give it to him for a promise, Val? Who are you, Susan Collins? Current events. Anyway, then Kelly finds Brandon on campus and recaps the doctor's appointment. By the way, as they're walking toward each other, you should describe this the shot that you cut, because I didn't even notice this and you were like right on top of it in this episode.
Yeah, and especially like I was like, maybe I'm just like not overreacting, but like maybe I'm just looking for this where it isn't, like their attempts to disguise her baby belly. Ugh, I hate that.
Yeah.
But the shot of them walking towards each other is so long that you cannot even tell like what gender these people are. Like, it's really far away, but she still looks huge. And then it happens again in the next episode and she looks even bigger, even though she's wearing black. It's so mean.
I know.
Yeah.
And it's in the dark and you still can tell.
Yeah.
That she's like a tent. Yeah, they have the camera for the shot in like San Diego and you still are like, ooh, not so good for this.
Yeah, and they keep blocking her, like, you know, for the next two episodes, like you will not be able to stop seeing it. Like, there's a group photo and she's behind Nat, or like always walking behind someone. She has a huge boa. She has a little like bag positioned in front of her that is maybe a third the size of her thorax at that point. Like, guys, just I know they're doing their best, but it's just not working.
No.
Also not working for me is Brandon's response to her announcement that she went to get on the pill with, that's cool, thanks for doing that.
Yeah, like, it's really weird.
Lunch. It's a really weird phrasing.
Right. Like, oh, I cleaned up the kitchen. Oh, hey, thanks. I went on the pill. Hey, thanks, man. Anyway.
I mean, thanks for thanking her, but fuck you. Ugh.
Yeah, it's weird. So she tells him that. He weirdly thanks her. Then she tells him about the miscarriage. And he wants to take her home, but she says she's okay. She wanted him to know, but now she just wants to be alone. And then because it's TV, there's some tragic irony that she quickly puts a pin in clip 12.
I don't want you to take this the wrong way, but you did say that right now wasn't a good time for us to have a child, remember? And you know, this whole thing has made me look forward to the family we will have together someday. Did I mention it takes 6 to make a hockey team?
We're not gonna have a family, Brandon.
Well, I mean, assuming we're still together and everything.
That's not what I mean.
What do you mean?
We're not gonna have a family because I can't give you one.
You sure? Mother Ginger, because you have a whole bunch of Paula Chanel's under that outfit, I am positive.
Yeah. I mean, I know they have to discuss this because they just had a pregnancy scare, but at the same time, like, you guys have been back together for like a month. You know, it's really soon to be talking about a future in which you are raising children together.
Yeah. Also, his little like Brandon Boo Boo Kitty voice, maddening.
Ugh. They mention it takes 6 to make a hockey team.
Yeah. Also, like, maybe this is just me seeing things through my own childless, empty wombed perspective. But if I feel like the, at least half of college students, even college grads, if they were told they were infertile, would be like, sweet. That's one less thing to worry about. Not to be disrespectful. I'm just saying she's 22. Also, this problem is not real. But
yeah, anyway. Exactly. But I don't know. I had not a similar problem, but just like some uterine weirdness that they sort of never exactly figured out what was going on. But I went through a bunch of tests right when I was 24, and you know, some very somber, like, this could make it more difficult for you to conceive and carry a child to term. And I was like, sweet, like dunking in the office. They're like, that's not the usual response. I'm like, whatever, get my coat. Like, I get that it's of concern to many people, but I totally agree with you that I was like, okay, can I go? They're like, bye.
Right. Like, wouldn't you have loved to have that news when you were even younger to be like, I mean, not that it was anything in your case, but, you know, to be told like, oh yeah, you don't have to worry about that. Great. No.
Sweet. Guess I'll send this diaphragm to the Smithsonian.
We're terrible. So Val makes it back to her room just in time for a call from Bill, both thanking her for the flowers that she sent to his room and saying he's not sure he knows what he did to deserve them. Bear in mind, like, he has no idea who she is. You think the jig is about to be up for Parker Lewis, but Val just says she's an investor and doesn't mention Parker Lewis at all. So they arrange to meet for drinks before Bill's dinner with Kelly. And then Brandon is showing up at Kelly's as she's getting ready to leave for dinner with her dad. He tried to call, but she tightly says she turned off the ringer. Very telling that they were entertaining the idea of having a baby together in the last episode. But in this one, Brandon doesn't even get invited along for the big Taylor summit. Whatever. Anyway, he doesn't mention that. Just taking note of how cold she is and asking what's going on. She doesn't want to talk about it. He thinks he has a right to know. Ron Howard narrator. He doesn't. Kelly huffs for 500 years and then says she has endometriosis, which makes it difficult for patients to get pregnant. And Brandon's like, difficult from not impossible, like someone who just heard of the condition for the first time 2 seconds ago. Kelly says that it obstructs the fallopian tubes. It's probably what caused her to miscarry, something that happens 40% of the time. Brandon needs to have started shutting up a month ago, clip 13.
So that means 60% of the time they don't. I'll take those odds.
You're not listening to me here, Brandon. I miscarried. I lost a child. You have no idea what that feels like. So don't talk to me about odds, okay? Yesterday, something was alive inside of me, and today it's dead.
Sorry.
You're right. I'm sorry. Cal. This doesn't change anything.
I wish I could believe that.
You can. It's the truth.
Brandon, you spent all week talking to me about how much you love children. How can you be happy in a relationship with someone who can't give you any?
Because I love you.
You are both babies. There are lots of ways to have children. Plus, you're both rich. You'll be Seriously. Fine if you're still together.
And science? I mean, it wasn't 1897. My cousin has this and she has three kids. It's not fatal to your chances of having your own biological children. And also, don't be so attached to that. And also,
something was alive inside me. Today it's dead.
Are you six?
I know.
Now the baby is bye-bye. Boo, 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 boo.
Oh, my God. You're killing me. Yeah, totally. Like this morning when she thought it was just her period, she was like totally chirpy
like
and it was
sayonara,
fine.
Sayonara, fetus.
Like, I can understand. Right. I understand that when you get the full story, it changes your perspective. Like, duh. But at the same time, it's like, you weren't going to have this baby anyway, you know, like I understand that you're reconfiguring your worldview and trying to figure out, you know, your place in the universe if having biological children isn't going to happen for you, but also get a grip, you're 22, you know, and so that's Kelly on the Brandon side being like, so that means 60% of the time it's fine. I like those odds. Like, oh, okay. You have the miscarriages then. Like that's not helpful. Yeah.
And also what is with that dumb and dumber line delivery? Like, so you're telling me there's a chance? Like,
totally.
You know what? This is not about your victorious sperm. Just go away.
No.
That's what she wants. That's what we all want.
Yes.
Kill yourself.
So Bill and Val meet for drinks. He's impressed that she goes to school full time and runs a successful business. And Val says this, clip 14.
Well, I think I have a real head for business.
And a bod
and
for
a
sin.
Bod for sin. Yes. I was worried we weren't going to say it.
I just assumed that's why you clipped it. Otherwise.
Of course.
It's
of course it
demonstrably
is.
Untrue. And is going to be demonstrably repeatedly demonstrated. Oh, Val.
Yes. The bod for sin part is true, though. If you don't know what we're referring to, get on Working Girl and educate yourself. It's a great movie.
It is. Holds up.
Peak hot Harrison Ford, too. She says that when she's invested in the proceeds of the Peach Pit After Dark sale with him, she'll be looking for other opportunities, and maybe here is where the jig is up. Clip 15.
Well, if you hit on something, let me know. I'm always looking to help startup ventures.
Oh, it's very generous of you, but I've already imposed enough.
No, Valerie, I told you for a friend of Kelly's, there's no such thing.
Sorry, I just can't believe I'm sitting across from Bill Taylor.
I had no idea I had a reputation that preceded me.
Well, you do. Derek speaks very highly of you.
Derek Driscoll?
Half of what he says is true. I know my life savings is in the right hands.
How do you know Derek?
I mean, this is classic Sean Donnelly, like, dude, something's wrong. How do you know Derek? I mean, I don't know. I love this character, not just because he's a shitheel to Kelly, but because sometimes his line readings are really hilarious. We'll see it more next week, but yeah. Good job, Sean.
Yeah, he's great. But alas, this is not where Derek's scheme is unmasked. I mean, Parker Lewis's, because this is when Kelly shows up and is a bitch about it. Bill tries to suggest that they all have dinner together, but Kelly, of course, stomps off. Bill tells Val they'll talk tomorrow and goes after Kelly, leaving Val to smile at her own brilliant plan playing out so perfectly. Live in that moment, Val. It's not going to last long. Kelly is then sipping tea on the deck when Brandon shows up. He had expected her to come over after dinner the previous night, so she has to recap the Val ambush. She thanks Brandon for staying with her in all these tough times.
She's also under the world's largest chenille blanket and has completely stopped giving a shit about washing her hair. Like, I mean,
it's that blanket I sent you yesterday, like folded in quarters. audience, I got an answer to me on Instagram for like the giantest knit blanket. It looks like it was knit with like literal fence posts. And it was that blanket, but you know, doubled over.
And she's wearing a work shirt.
Val shows up.
And her, I mean, oh God, like I feel for Jenny Garth at this point in the pregnancy. You're just over it. But man, it really, like, someone put a mattress, someone walk by carrying a mattress, please.
Seriously. So then Val shows up at the hotel for breakfast with Bill at his invitation. She says she wanted so badly to invest with him that she overstated her friendship with Kelly. And he says he's the one who owes her an apology. He does. She tries to keep the subject on Kelly and what she might have told Bill about Val. But Bill wants to get back to business in clip 16.
We have a study to tell you about Derek Driscoll.
He's a real charmer. A hustler. Probably brings in a lot of business.
He hasn't worked for me in over 3 months.
What do you mean? He's not on salary or something? He just works on commission?
He doesn't work for me at all.
That's impossible.
Not since I caught him embezzling money from clients. Driscoll is a crook, Valerie. He talks people into giving him their money and then he disappears.
No, wait, see. I met him here, in your LA office.
I don't have an LA office.
I gave him $100,000. That's all the money I have. I mean, without it, I have nothing.
I am so sorry. I just wish there's something I could do.
Absolutely nothing.
What's with the sex guitar?
Whew. Yikes.
Yeah. I love how on TV nobody even has like $112 left over. It's like always this exact figure and now they're completely ruined.
Right. It's Dylan all over again. Like, didn't you learn anything? And when this happened, I was like, oh my God, maybe that means Jonesy's coming back for the finale.
No.
Alas, they forgot Jonesy exists.
Jonesy was just on a Monk rerun as a juror that I watched the other day. I really missed him.
I've been seeing him in his Roseanne arc recently.
God, he must have been 12.
When he was the dad who lived next door. Yeah, he was very young. And that's it.
Okay.
Let's start with our, let's close things out with our MVP. Parker Lewis, man, he got $100,000.
I mean, you almost want to give it to Valerie until like the last 2 minutes of the episode. But instead, I'm going to give it to Sean Donnelly. I will be calling Sean Donnelly and not Bill Taylor. Yep.
Fair enough.
Because he always disappoints Kelly and she is a bitch about it and she deserves it. I totally understand why he doesn't want to take her to dinner ever. She's terrible. And also it'll be really expensive because she's eating for like four at this point.
It's true. Least valuable player. Kelly's gynecologist, probably about to be sued, as Sarah just said.
Camera two, that they're like, we'll just set up over here, like 90 yards away. Didn't work.
We're here in Tulum. Can you see us? No? Okay.
Oh, Tulumer.
How about Cleveland?
Finally, a user submitted challenge. At CCC481981 asks us to list five ways characters in this episode were seldom right and wrong again. Gonna start with Brandon being really wrong about how easily it is to shrug off the possibility of 40% of your pregnancies ending in miscarriage.
I gotta go with Steve never having this conversation with Rush and or feeling entitled to more support and help after the college is paid for.
Claire really underestimating her father's ability to cope with life overseas, especially considering, as I recall, they have already lived overseas before.
Yeah, exactly. What the hell? Valerie. Just, oh, Valerie.
Like, need we say
okay,
more?
Okay, but nope. I want that meeting. Like, oh, girl. No.
And Professor Langley for giving in to all of Donna's Donniosities.
Oh, God.
Let her learn one lesson in her stupid life.
Even if it takes extra time. Next time on Again With This, despite seldom going to class and having more vacation days than lectures over the last 4 years, the gang finally graduates from California University, and Claire graduates from the show, spoiler. But not until we get one last sustained blast of sunshine up Brandon's butthole in an episode that itself seems to take 4 years to end. You'll want to hang yourself with a tassel when you check out our visual aids for this and every other episode of Again With This. They're on our website at previously.tv. You can follow that website on Twitter at previouslyTV, and you can follow this very podcast on Twitter at AWT90210. I'm Pointless Dark. Roast Sarah D. Bunting. I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Capitalist Titan Biography, Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Extremely Obvious Con Man, David T. Cole. He's on Twitter at Clark. Talk to you next time.
Hang yourself with the tassels?
Yeah.
Hi, God. You know what to do after the beep.
What's even happening? David Cole graduated.